Him? Who is him?
You saw those things in the hall?
Yeah.
I made them. I didn't mean to, but I made them. They'll go away eventually. They're fading. But the Band-Aid knows, man, he's different.
Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. As ever, I'm your host, Tony Black, and this is our third and final look at Home Again, the fourth episode of the Season 10 X-Files revival. And for a third time, I am joined by Andrew Brooker.
Hello.
Hello again. This is it now, the last look at a very divisive episode, to say the least. So are you going to be glad that we can put this one to bed?
I think I am, yeah. I can take my disappointment, put it to the side, and then wait for Tuesday so we can sit and watch the next one.
Yeah, look forward to Babylon, which a title which suggests good things.
It does.
Let's just hope it lives up to it, yeah. To start off, we've got a little bit of listener feedback. Our old mate, Zach Moore, has messaged in a good little bit of feedback. So he said, interesting episode. Felt it was the best directed of the relaunch, but the weakest story. Great atmosphere and Monster of the Week in Trash Man, but ultimately it felt like so many other episodes with Mulder and Scully, always one step behind the plot and have no impact on its outcome. All the stuff with Scully's mom was great though, and elevated the episode along with the direction and atmosphere, and it really reminded me, I think he's really got a good one here, he really reminded me of a mashup between One Breath and The List.
Okay.
Now, do you remember The List? That was the one with Season 3 where Mulder investigates a lot of murders in a prison.
Yeah.
And I really like The List. It's really, really nasty in places, The List. It's proper fucking brutal. So I can kind of see where he's coming from with The List, really.
Yeah, it's definitely got the atmosphere. It's definitely, you know, I won't take that away from it. It's the atmosphere in most of it, especially in most of the monster parts of the episode, are very good. I don't think I agree with the Scully thing. I don't think it belongs in the episode at all. Which, you know, which I've already said a couple of times. I don't think it doesn't add anything to that episode.
No, I'm with you on that one. Really, I can see where he's coming from, but
it adds to the character absolutely, and it's certainly stuff that we should get. I just don't think this is the episode for it.
No, I know. I think he's right actually, though, when he says it's. I think it's the best. He's the best directed. I think in terms of visuals, I think he's absolutely right. An atmosphere, like you've said. I think in terms of the way it's put together and the structure of it, it's not. But I think in terms of visually, it could turn out to be one of the most attractive, weirdly enough. And it's got that really dark and, you know, sinister edge, which I think is good. And it could lend itself to repeat viewings well in that sense.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I jumped out of my skin when they were down in the tunnels.
Yeah, yeah.
And that thing crosses out in front of them.
Yeah, that was a jump moment, wasn't it?
I shat a brick and ran out of the room. Jesus Christ. You know, you don't get that. You know, X-Files always had a couple of episodes a season that had a couple of good jumps like that. And it's good that they've got that back. So, yeah, I mean, he's definitely onto something with, you know, the atmosphere and the direction. For sure, it looks amazing. And yeah, very, very atmospheric.
Definitely, yeah. And you can find Zach Moore at More on Zach on Twitter. And he's also, as we mentioned before, he's now started his podcast, Always Smallville, Always Hold On to Smallville, at Always Smallville on Twitter, which you should check out. But I'm mentioning this mainly because he tweeted us the other day after the Guy Mann episode. You know what's coming here, don't you?
Yeah.
He made the point that the Weir Monster from Mulder and Scully Meet the Weir Monster looks a lot like Doomsday from Smallville, and he's put a comparison picture, and he's so right.
Spot on
it's
as well.
Spot on. It really is. It's hilarious. You need to look at that. So there's an Uber theory there that maybe the Weir Monster's Doomsday.
I like the idea of a DC X-Files crossover.
That if that hasn't happened in comics, I'd be amazed. Surely that's to come, really.
I think it needs to now.
That's a great idea. Just Mulder and Scully and Batman. I'd so read that. Get on it, comic book people. Joe Harris, if you're listening, make it happen. Yes, so do check out Always Smallville. It's a great podcast. And thanks for that feedback, Zach. So we've got a little bit more feedback to come later, but we're going to talk first about the Trash Man or the Band-Aid Nose Man, whichever you want to call him, because there's kind of two characters there, really, isn't there? The Trash Man's one person and the monster's the other, although they're kind of almost the same.
Yeah, see, this is where I get lost. And I think this comes back to what we said previously, is that they haven't had time to explain exactly what's going on. So, and maybe I'm tired or confused or something, but twice now I've watched this episode and I still can't quite figure out where this thing has come from and what he's doing.
Well, what I can gather is, obviously, you know, when we first see the monster, he's travelling around in a garbage truck, which, whether it's being driven by somebody, you never quite know. It almost seems to be driven of its own accord, doesn't it, really? It's like, you know, it doesn't seem to have a driver, which is creepy in itself. And then he's basically taking out council officials who are trying to relocate the homeless, which was an interesting idea, really, isn't it? In terms of the fact that, obviously, on American streets, it happens on British streets as well in major cities. There's a big homeless problem in this day and age. So it was quite a current thing to be doing, wasn't it?
I have to admit, I wondered if there was something, because obviously, us being over in the UK, we don't hear everything that goes on in the States. But I wondered if something had happened recently in the US that had inspired this episode. Because it does seem it's very specific, isn't it?
It's quite topical, isn't it, really? It feels quite topical. In that there's some kind of issue maybe on major city streets about relocating the homeless. I thought it almost felt a little bit sort of dystopian in a way.
Yep.
You know, in as best a dystopian way as you can imagine. It kind of ties into the overarching themes of this series, this revival about how, you know, our freedoms and liberties are being taken away. And you could argue that this is another incidence of this, really, but just for the lower strata of society.
Yeah, absolutely. They've lost that fight against the future, haven't they?
Yeah. Oh, nice little X-Files movie title there. Well done.
Yeah. Off the top of my head, I'm okay with that.
Brilliant.
But yeah, they kind of... Yeah, it's got that dystopian feel to it. The entire series has, and this one definitely... Almost like the, I don't know if you've seen it, like the people that live on the outskirts of the city in Equilibrium.
Yes, yeah. I saw that last year, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of got that feel to it, like they don't belong there, and if we see you, we're moving you on, or we're killing you, as they do in Equilibrium. But, you know, it does feel very much, this one's definitely attacking the lower classes.
Yeah.
Of society.
And then obviously the killer is trying to take out the people who are trying to move these people on. And I thought that was interesting. There were some interesting ideas about the killer, like the whole idea of him appearing on like a billboard and then disappearing. So it's almost like he's an artist's figure. This is what I got from it. The Trash Man obviously was the artist, the name of the artist.
Yeah.
And he talks about how he has used a tulpa, which is like a Tibetan mystical art, in order to bring something into a thought form. Now, this actually, I don't know if you know this, but this has been done before on the show.
Yes, mid-series, wasn't it?
It was Arcadia in season 6.
Yeah.
Which was the well-known as the episode where Mulder and Scully go undercover as a married couple. It's a great little episode in that respect. It's got some wonderful little stuff. But the actual story is, most of the time people forget, but it was just this big lunking sort of garbage monster that starts killing people in the neighbourhood. And that was a tulpa, because that was the head of the guy who ran the community, who was doing it to protect things. So it's the same idea. And obviously it's been so long that I think either the writers have forgotten or they're hoping we've forgotten.
But didn't in that one, let me make sure I get this right, in that one, Mulder, that was Mulder's theory, wasn't it? Or Mulder believed that story, whereas this time around, we're back to him being a skeptic and going, well, no, that's not right. That's not possible, and that can't be done.
Yeah, because he's told by the Trash Man.
Yeah.
And that was something I did think, well, in the old days, Mulder would have guessed that. You know, it's either bad storytelling, or like you said, it's the fact that Mulder's actually got a bit more sage and skeptical in his older age, which, you know, you could be seeing it either way, really. But
I think you can see him as a skeptic, but at the same time, you know, Just because I change my viewpoint doesn't mean I forget everything I thought of previously.
Yeah, Yeah. It's almost like, well, why didn't you think it was a Torpa? You know, he knew what a Torpa was when he was told by the trash man.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised he didn't get there himself.
And then maybe he's just not given enough information to come to that conclusion on his own.
Possibly, because for a lot of the episode, he's out with Scully, as we've talked about.
Yeah. He's just kind of wandering around chasing body parts, isn't he? Yeah. He's not really given the opportunity to figure out what it actually is until he meets the artist.
And it's a bit of a rushed, convoluted explanation as to the trash man and his motives and, you know, what he's trying to do. I need to watch that again to really pick up on all that again, because it was kind of rushed. And by that point, I was a little bit like, this is all right, but, you know, I kind of wished there was a different answer, actually. I think the ultimate answer as to what the monster was wasn't as interesting as how it was set up.
No, and I think the problem is, actually, and I'd be curious as to if you have this as well, I had the exact same experience the second time I watched it too.
Mm.
So even, you know, because I knew what was coming, I still felt like he was droning on, talking out of his ass, and actually didn't explain a thing.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Yeah.
And I'm literally, by the time he stopped talking, I had to stop and rewind the episode and let him talk again.
Oh.
Because I felt like I'd glazed over.
Yeah, that's not good.
Completely ignored what he said.
I mean,
that's bad for any TV episode, but that's really bad for an X-Files episode.
Yeah, and it's bad for your concluding sort of explanation, definitely. Yeah. You know, if you're actually trying to get some kind of understanding by the end of it, you know, to actually get a bit bored by the reveal.
The only other time I think I've ever done that is when I was watching The Architect explain himself in The Matrix 2. And now everybody knows exactly how I felt, because we all done the same thing. We all sat there and just stared as he talked at us, but we had no fucking idea what he was saying.
Like, just not listening, mate. Yeah.
Yep, and that's exactly how I felt letting the artist explain himself to me in this episode. It's not registering with me at all, and you're clearly talking bollocks.
It's true. Thankfully, the monster himself, the Band-Aid Nose Man, referenced at the point where Mulder picks up a horribly sort of icky Band-Aid from under his foot, and he's like, oh, that was a horrible little point. And you see his face, he's actually
That is pretty good, but he's pulled that face that we've all pulled when we've trodden on one of those bastards in the swimming pool.
It's true, yeah. Gone,
oh, you dirty fucker.
Yeah, I like that moment. That was funny. But the monster himself is really good. Obviously, you know, we've talked a little bit about the savagery. You know, I don't think any of us quite expected him to literally just rip that guy apart at the beginning and just sort of go like that. I went, whoa!
I did. But this was the thing, though, wasn't it? I saw that and I went, oh, this is literally the first thing that came to mind was, oh, it's the peacocks.
Yeah. Because he looked like a peacock, brother, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all back to that sense of disappointment when you suddenly realised it wasn't.
It's not. And actually, thinking about it, when he climbs into the back of the garbage truck, it's a bit like when the peacocks climb into the back of the car and drive off. That's something that has only just occurred to me. There's lots of little sort of, I think, winks to that. And obviously the biggest one, as we've talked about, is the murder of Nancy, the council worker, to Downtown by Petula Clark in her house. That is possibly my favourite moment, actually, because there was some really disturbing, weird, creepy visuals. And then you had the thunder and lightning. It was very new gothic. You had the music playing. You had her screaming, running around the house. And the trash man, he's just appearing everywhere. I was really unsettled by that. I thought that was really well done.
Yes, at that point, though, I have found that both times I've watched it, I've gone, I'm not entirely sure what they're trying to do with him. So that he's climbed out the back of the truck outside her house. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now there's the nasty, stinky, maggot-infested footprints on the stairs.
Ugh, yeah.
And he's standing up the top of the stairs. I don't understand why he's upstairs.
Maybe to get a nice, creepy visual.
It's the only thing it is, though, isn't it? It is new gothic horror visuals, you know, that we've all had. Slasher films for years have been doing it.
Yeah.
You know, killer at the top of the stairs. But there's no actual reason for him to be up there. And then for him to suddenly be outside when she goes to the door.
Yeah.
I quite like that because it's definitely got that supernatural feel to it. But it's not explained to me properly why it's got that supernatural feel to it.
Well, this is it, you know, and the whole explanation of what he is or what he appears to be is just... It doesn't quite tie up as to how the Trash Man could do that and how it kind of works. You know, the internal logic of the weirdness isn't there. I'd rather of him had been a bit like, you know, like Zach mentioned the list. In the list, you know, Neech Manley, who was the killer,
yeah,
who'd come back from the dead and he kept appearing as like a fly, you would see him in brief flashes or, you know, he'd just appear in the back of a car and then strangle somebody and then he'd go. There was a genuine supernatural element, the whole idea that maybe his soul has come back for vengeance. And, you know, there was no, like, you know, mystical bollocks for that. It was just, he has learnt how to reincarnate, potentially, through arcane knowledge, and he's done it. Yeah. But you don't know. So the moments you see him are really effective. But with this one, by the time that, as we've talked about, the ending just ends, and the Trash Man just fucks off and leaves, like, a little melon head.
Yeah.
I was like... Really? For all the build-up of this really quite big, sinister monster.
This ultra-violent monster as well.
Yeah, this fucking...
Let's not forget that he... And I still can't quite figure out why he killed the guys selling the art.
Which guy? Oh, the guys... Yeah, that's true.
And did you... I don't know if you noticed it. I didn't notice it until the second time I watched it. He rips the dude's head off. It's got spine hanging from his head.
Really? I didn't see that.
Literally, and I mean, it's like it's old school Mortal Kombat stuff. You know? This guy's got a spine hanging from his head. And I watched it. I said to the wife, I went, well, that's just pissed all over me and Tony talking about how the violence is there but isn't that bad.
Yeah.
Because holy fuck.
Yeah, I'm going to look for that when I watch it again.
It's actually like this dripping spine hanging out of this guy's neck. Like, oh, Jesus. It's only for a split second, and it ain't that bad. But I was like, oh, bloody hell.
But it's there. This tops, you know, we talked about how bits of Founder's mutation were gory. This tops that, definitely. It really put it, you know, this is the goriest the show's been for a while.
It does push that limit as well, yeah, doesn't it?
And I think that's what he was trying to do, you know, the whole home thing again. The little winks to that. I think it was there, an attempt to try and get a little bit of that, you know, shock value back. But this is the thing. With Home, you had a really good singular story, a really disturbing tale, which ended properly. And, you know, it really came together beautifully. This doesn't. And ultimately, I just think the Trash Man actually deserves, the Band-Aid Nose Man deserves to be better remembered than I think he will be. Because I think he's got the makings of a great X-Files monster.
Yeah, he deserves a better episode.
Yeah, he does. It's almost, in a way, I kind of hope he comes back one day because there might be a better sequel there. I don't know.
Yeah, but, I mean the whole because there are all these nods to Home, and the problem is that the thing with Home was it was grounded in reality to a point. But this one, it's good that you have the themes, but have a supernatural element as well. It's very, very cool, but you have to do it properly, and this just doesn't feel like it was done right.
No, I don't.
Almost
think it was.
To the point where they've gone, we need to do something to make people think of Home.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's not, that's not enough, you know, as ever.
It's almost insulting as a fan, to be fair.
Yeah, a little bit. There was an agreement really with our last little bit of feedback, which was from our friend Tania Hernandez. He'll be back for the My Struggle 2 episode in a couple of weeks. She said, the parts with Scully were great, but I wasn't really feeling the case. I'm feeling 50-50 about the whole episode. So I think, again, the consensus, really, that she will maybe watch it again. Maybe, Tanya, if you watch it again, and you might get more from it. But if it's like Andrew, you might just see all the...
now you just get to see the gory bits that you missed first time around.
Yeah.
It's got the makings of a great... It's got the makings of two great episodes.
Yeah.
But you can't fit both those things into the 45 minutes that it's on for.
I think that basically sums Home Again up, really. Which is a shame. But let's hope it's not a terrible misstep. It's not by any means a terrible episode, and there have been worse X-Files. But...
Well, yeah, it's still nowhere near the worst X-Files.
Oh, no. No, it's got enough good stuff to be a mid-tier episode.
We just need to hope this isn't the start of the downward slope.
Wow. This is it. And, you know, we can hope that Babylon next week, which you'll be back for, will... you know, step it back up a little bit and be a little bit more of a Founder's mutation, hopefully. But we'll see. Quickly, before we go, a little nod to another podcast called Story Breakers, who this week actually released an X-Files related episode. Storybreakers is at Storybreakers, and they're a podcast of two or three guys who come up every week with different story pitches based on quite often recommendations from people. So they've done mashups like Die Hard meets Jurassic Park and all kinds of things like that. They've done a real load, and I pitched them to do an X-Files 3, so doing the third movie. Yeah, and they've come back with an episode where they and another guest, who is also going to appear on the X-Cast eventually now, talk about what they would do for the third X-Files film following I Want to Believe. So it doesn't track with the Season 10 continuity, it's just picking up from I Want to Believe. It's really fun what they do. They come up with some really cool ideas. So I would encourage you to go over to Storybreakers and listen to their X-Files 3 podcast. And it also features me very briefly. So, yeah, that's a good fun one.
Always worth having something different to listen to when I'm walking the dog.
Well, there you go. Yeah. And it's X-Files related, so you can't go wrong. Yeah. Okay, well, until next week, thanks for joining us, Andrew.
Well, thanks for having me on again.
Always an absolute pleasure. And until next time, guys, remember, trust no one.